This is Radio Boston. I'm Anthony Brooks.
And I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. And this is one of the faces of Boston's ongoing foreclosure crisis.
Boy, the banks go at you all kind of ways. When they take my $34,500 down, they know later on down the line they was going to get that house back, plus they done take my savings.
Marshall Cooper lives in Dorchester. He drained his savings taking care of his elderly parents. And though he's still hanging on to his house, just barely, he's been served several 72-hour notices of eviction. Cooper's is one story of many featured in a new multimedia documentary project called We Shall Not Be Moved. It's by photographer Kelly Creedon. She visited families facing foreclosure and gathered their stories in conjunction with City Life Vita Urbana and the Bank Tenant Association, a group of former Boston homeowners fighting eviction and foreclosure. I spoke earlier with Kelly Creedon about We Shall Not Be Moved, and I asked her to describe the face of foreclosure in Boston as she discovered it.
Boston, on a national level, doesn't come up when we talk about the national impact of the foreclosure crisis. You look at places like Las Vegas or Detroit or California or Florida, but if you look at the communities in Boston that are impacted during the height of the subprime lending, 2004 to 2006, the highest numbers of expensive, high-risk loans were made in the five communities that have the highest concentrations of minority residents, which are Dorchester, Mattapan, Roxbury, Hyde Park, and East Boston. And not surprisingly, you know, now when we look at the concentrations of foreclosure activity, 80% of all foreclosure activity happening now is happening in those same five communities. And so, while, again, this is an issue that crosses boundaries of race and class and lots of different divisions, at the same time, it's really compelling how the crisis has impacted specifically communities of color.
One of the stories that you featured that I found really affecting was that of Reggie Fuller and Luana Hall, who are actually tenants in a home where the landlord is being foreclosed on. So here's a little bit of the story that you gathered. Here's Reggie Fuller.
We've made this our home. We paid our rent on time. It's hard because I have a place to live, and yet I'm homeless. I don't have the money to find another place to live. Even though I'm working, you know, 40 hours a week, 52 weeks a year, and the desire to keep my family together and to stay positive through it, it can be emotionally a little bit more than I can bear some weeks, some days. But you know, we keep going in spite of that.
That's Reggie Fuller sharing the story of his impending homelessness, as he calls it, because of the foreclosure crisis, even though their tenants faithfully paying their landlord. Kelly Creedon, it's not just the audio that's part of this exhibition. You've taken some really tender, intimate photographs as well. I mean, in the piece with Reggie and Luana, we see he talks about how there's been a fire in the building and 8 to 10 foreclosures just around his block, and we see those images. And one picture that you took in their house, which was just so, I felt really revealing, was in their kitchen, where it's just their refrigerator and there's a little map of Africa on there. So what were you thinking, or how did you go about gathering the sort of visual component of the difficulty that these people are going through?
Visually, I was trying to think of what does family look like and what does home look like and what does the intimate day-to-day life of people facing foreclosure look like. And so some of the quiet moments that people are suffering through or experiencing on an individual level.
I mean, visually, do those intimate moments, do they look different than in homes that aren't going through foreclosure?
That's a really good point. I think that one thing that I've found in looking at other photography and coverage of the foreclosure issue is that you see vacant homes. You see vacant homes and homes that have been abandoned and left behind, and that is one side of the foreclosure issue. But I think one thing that this story is trying to say is that foreclosure is not always the end of the line for people, and it's not it doesn't mean that automatically those people disappear. People are still in these homes, and people are still living their lives day to day, and it doesn't look a lot different than a typical home and a typical block and a, you know, non-foreclosure situation.
They really do. I mean, there's some wonderful pictures you have of Marshall Cooper and his home, another person that's featured in We Shall Not Be Moved. His home is very lived in. I mean, he's still there. But outside, there are all these placards and signs showing how he's become, you know, an anti-foreclosure activist.
The signs I got, this is what I stand for. And this is just for them to look at and see that I'm trying to hold on. Because everybody come around here, stand across the street, or either they park there. Like the investors come by, driving by. I said, don't need to stop here. The money you're going to pay down to try to buy this house, you better save it and put it in the bank and get interest on it, because I'm not going nowhere.
So how is it that you convince these families to be so public and open with their battles against foreclosure?
You know, I'd like to take credit for that, but I think that's probably not fair. I have connected with this issue through connecting with City Life, Vida Urbana, and the Bank Tenant Association. And what I learned about their model and their way of helping people face foreclosure is encouraging people to stand up and to speak out and to tell their story and to break that silence. And that's one of the things that I found really compelling about the movement and how they bring people together and encourage people to speak out.
And Kelly Creedon, you can really feel the power of that sense of community. Here's Marshall Cooper describing just that.
And I tell you something, I was so quiet, ashamed, didn't hardly want to get up and say nothing. But after going to City Life and listening to everybody else's problem, I don't mind running my mouth telling my problem.
So I started going to the community meetings, and 60 or 80 or 100 or over 100 people sometimes show up every week at these meetings and stand up. And being in a room of people who are facing the same challenges, who are, you know, also afraid and frustrated and embarrassed and, you know, are coming together to support each other, you can almost feel people like exhale to be in that room and to feel the support and to feel that network of community.
In this room, we don't get a service provided to us. We join forces together and we fight back. So for newcomers that are here, this is something very different. It's something very unlike anything that you've ever done before. I can almost promise you. But it's also worth it. You get the education that you need, which is something that the system does not want us to have. You get the empowerment you need so that, right, Ursula? So that things that you thought you couldn't do, you can do. And when people tell you that you can't, you still know you can. And you get the faith that it takes to fight for the justice that we all should have. That's what we do in these rooms.
When you were out there finding families and talking to people, did you encounter folks who were just still deep in despair and not sure what the future was going to hold for them?
You know, it's interesting because people ask me this question all the time. You know, when I tell them that I'm doing this project documenting the foreclosure crisis, they say, wow, that must be really depressing. And but what I found really compelling and moving was that even families who were still unclear about the resolution of their case were finding strength in connecting with other people and connecting with their community. I think that's a source of strength, and I think it's a source of hope and optimism that I think really comes across in people's stories.
Well, Kelly Creedon, thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you very much for having me.
There's an opening reception for Kelly Creedon's project, We Shall Not Be Moved, on Saturday at 4 p.m. in Dorchester at the Great Hall in Codman Square.
Next week on Radio Boston, Senator Scott Brown joins us to talk about politics and about his new memoir. Also, a Boston-based director and her powerful movie about a female Iraqi war vet and PTSD, nominated for an Oscar for Best Documentary Short. Harvard economist Ed Glaser joins us to talk about the triumphs of city life in Boston and Citizen Somerville, growing up in the Irish gang wars of the 1960s.
Radio Boston is a production of WBUR with regular contributions from The Angle at Boston.com.
Our show is produced by Adam Ragusa, Jessica Alpert, and Dan Mawsey. Our interns are Jason Breslow, Amory Sivertson, and Anna Pinkert.
Jeremy Bernfeld is our web producer. Tim Skog is our technical director.
The executive producer of Radio Boston is Mark Navin.
I'm Meghna Chakrabarty.
And I'm Anthony Brooks.
Have a wonderful weekend and join us again on Monday for more Radio Boston.